Gardner, and I'm here with Matt Velasquez for the next edition of our Bucks podcast. I'm in New York tonight. Where else? That's where I've been most of the week. I've been in Milwaukee a little bit this week, Matt, although I saw you last night for the Jabari Parker's return against the Philadelphia 76ers. But most of the week, the Bucks are spending in New York. They started it again with a game against the Brooklyn Nets on Monday, their first victory, and are back here to play the New York Knicks Friday night at Madison Square Garden. I'm at my hotel just a few blocks away from the Garden. And Matt, already plenty of ups and downs for the Bucks, plenty of things going on. And so there's a few things to discuss. And for the Bucks, I guess they're happy that they finally got these first two victories of the season after starting out 0-3.
Absolutely. And, you know, for the ups and downs and all the, you know, expectations coming into this year and the 0-3 start, last year on November 5th, they were 2-3 after a loss to the Bulls. They're in the same spot as they were last year. So, you know, obviously that season ended up okay. They were 41-41. They didn't try the last game. They could have been over 500 if they kind of tried to do anything against the Celtics there. You know, so I know there are some people who are frustrated with the slow start that the Bucks have put together, especially on the defensive end. But, you know, you got to remember, it's an 82-game season, and after five games, they're at the same spot they were last year, you know, with the pieces in place to do some different things and some better things. So, you know, that's where they are right now. And one of those big pieces, obviously, is Jabari Parker. And I think you and I are just as happy as any fan that Jabari's back, because now Jabari watches over. We don't have to worry about when's he going to come back, you know, which team is he going to play against first, you know, will he start, will he not start, what is minutes limit going to look like. You know, we've got answers to those questions, and a lot of them we got starting with you. You're the one who broke the news while you're on the road in Toronto and Brooklyn. So why don't you take us through the timeline of breaking that news and Jabari's trajectory towards coming back to the Bucks?
Yes, Matt. Well, Jabari, I think the plan all along was for him to come back on Wednesday night. And, of course, that wasn't divulged for a long time. But that was the plan that Suki Hobson, who's worked so hard with Jabari to get him back on the court, the strength and conditioning coach for the Bucks, and the coaching staff, they were working under that plan. And it was interesting that Jason Kidd said that he had practiced with the first team for the last week. So that was revealed as well on Monday in Brooklyn. And I think the final step basically was for Jabari and Tyler Ennis, who also got cleared on Monday here in New York. The final step was for them to meet with the surgeon who did their surgeries, Dr. David Olchek, who, you know, Matt, is the Mets doctor, your baseball team, you know, yeah, that you cheer for. But it was funny because I heard that, of course, he was a little bit busy recently with the Mets being in the World Series. And in fact, Game 5 didn't end until quite late on Sunday. And Dr. Olchek was able to see both Jabari and Tyler on Monday and kind of give the final clearance.
There you go. So there you have it, Bucks fans. You might have Matt Harvey and Yuri's Familia to thank for Jabari being back on the court, because if that series goes longer, maybe they don't get to see Olchek. Maybe they don't get to get cleared in the time that they do. I mean, it just shows you how many people go into this whole process and how, you know, circumstantial things can be sometimes. So I guess you're welcome.
Yes. There you go. Yeah, it hurts, right, Matt?
But it's rough.
But I think they were, you know, from what I heard, Dr. Olchek was very pleased with both of them, and they were cleared. I think Jabari, the target date was Wednesday, and we all know now that he played 16 minutes, looked a little tentative out there, as our columnist Gary D'Amato wrote about in in this morning's paper. But Jabari, I think, was happy to be back. And Coach Kidd mentioned that, hey, it's going to take some time, and they're not expecting miracles at the beginning. They just want him to get comfortable. I think it will be interesting to see now, as you said, Matt, now that's over with. Now he's going to get into the regular grind of the season. And I saw him after practice today. I just said hi to him briefly, and I said, hey, how do you feel today? And he said, hey, I feel great. I feel great. So he definitely came through that first night, you know, passing the test in that he's looking forward to more action, and I'm sure that's going to be the plan to raise his minutes as he moves along. And I'm sure he's going to lose some of that tentativeness that we saw in the first game as he gets out there in the fray in these games. Now, one thing Coach Kidd said, that he wouldn't play back-to-backs. So, as you know, Matt, the Bucks have two back-to-backs coming up. They play here against the Knicks in New York, and then Brooklyn back home on Saturday. Then next week, Boston at home at Denver, in kind of a strange back-to-back, no doubt. I haven't seen one like that, with a home game and then at Denver. You could probably look for Jabari to play in two of those four games.
Well, it makes you wonder it makes you wonder if Kidd's going to sit him against the Knicks on Friday so he could play at home against the Nets on Saturday, and then play again at home on Tuesday against the Celtics, and then he could rest on the road against the Nuggets. So that, you know,
we'll find out that plan probably tomorrow.
Right. Yeah. Unless he just says, all right, we're going to have him go against the Knicks, and then we'll play against Brooklyn without him, and then we'll have him for the Boston game, and then probably not against the Nuggets. I mean, that would make the most sense to me. Either you play him for the first and the third, or you sandwich him in for those two home games to get the maximum, you know, exposure at home. You know, there is a difference playing at home and on the road, and he would certainly feel more comfortable playing at home in front of a supportive fan base, you know, than having to, you know, test himself. But eventually he's going to have to play on the road. I mean, they got a span.
I don't think that will be a problem. I don't think that's a problem. I wouldn't be surprised to see him possibly playing here tomorrow. And then maybe they'd have a couple days for rest. They'd have Saturday, Sunday, Monday before he'd have to play again on Tuesday.
Right, and part of that has to do with...
We'll just have to see about that. And part of that will go into personnel. There are other injuries, as we know.
That's what I was going to say. And, you know, MCW, as you reported today, MCW and John Henson are still doubtful. OJ Mayo still out when it comes to Friday's game. So, you know, I know we were talking with Jason Kidd before the game last night, and of course he gets Jabari Parker back, and then MCW goes out. So he still doesn't have the starting lineup that he had wanted to have and that he still wants to have, you know, going forward during the season.
Yeah, that was so close. I mean, it was literally seconds away from having that starting five, and then MCW slipped on the wet spot in the corner of the floor there in just the final seconds against Brooklyn. And MCW is on the trip, but I was told today that, you know, very unlikely he will play tomorrow. I don't know what his status beyond that will be. But he is on the trip with the team, which I think is an encouraging sign. John Henson, who has missed the last four games with that sore Achilles, did go through the limited drills. They just had a short practice today, but he went through the drills, and he sounded optimistic that he might be able to play against the Knicks, even though he's still listed as doubtful. So we'll see. I think what they want to do, Matt, is evaluate him tomorrow, see how he came through the practice and how he feels at shoot around tomorrow at the Garden on Friday morning. So we'll see if he's available. That would certainly be a lift to give Greg Monroe, who's been averaging some pretty big minutes I think 34 minutes a game. That's quite significant already. So they would probably like to lessen the load on Greg. Greg has been playing very well. But that would be something. And Mayo's still out with the hamstrings, so when he's targeted to return.
And the sooner that Henson comes back, the sooner we get the answer of whether or not Kidd is willing to play him and Monroe together at any point. And I think, you know, against the Knicks, you could see that being a tandem that would be useful, considering, you know, how much Kristaps Porzingis affected the game when they first met on opening night with his 7-3 frame. You would expect that John Henson would be a guy who, with his length and with his, you know, quickness and athleticism, could, you know, theoretically guard him, you know, instead of putting, you know, a shorter guy like Johnny O'Brien or Chris Copeland on Porzingis, where you're giving up a lot of length.
Yes, Porzingis had a very good game, as you mentioned, in Milwaukee at 16 points, 5 rebounds. And one statistic I found today, Matt, that I thought was just the stat of the day, was that Porzingis had 12 free throw attempts against the Bucks. Remember, he went to the line quite a bit in that opener. And in the game since then, the Knicks have the same record as the Bucks at 2-3. In all the games since then, four games, he has not shot more than two free throws. So that was, you know, a kid was kidding last night, or not really kidding about it, but saying he was asked a question about the Bucks fouling tendencies, and he said, hey, that hasn't changed. We fouled too much last year. We're still fouling too much. And that's something he said these young guys are just going to have to learn. He talked about fouling late in the shot clock. So,
You know, we were talking earlier about how, you know, Porzingis, you know, he's a young guy. He's new to the league, and he's got a problem with fouling too. And
he's also been in foul trouble.
Yeah, he takes himself off the court and out of the game more than, you know, opposing defenses do.
Yeah, that really limited his production. On Wednesday night, they lost in Cleveland after the Knicks had a big early lead. And then, of course, the Cavs came back behind LeBron and won the game by 10 points. But Porzingis, who had an injury, had suffered a neck injury when Carmelo had inadvertently stepped on him in a game here earlier this week against the Spurs. But he started, and he was back in the lineup, and he played 21 minutes. But I think he would have played much more, obviously, if he hadn't been in foul trouble. He had picked up his fourth foul early in the second half and then picked up a fifth after he came back in. So, as you say, Matt, that's something he's just going to have to learn. But a lot of promising developments for him in the first few weeks with the Knicks. He showed his mobility, showed his... you know, he had his first double-double against the Spurs of his career, and you know, had a sensational dunk in that game against San Antonio. So he's looking very good. And the one thing that hasn't happened, Matt, is that Derek Williams, who went off for 24 against the Bucks, hasn't shown that in any of the remaining games so far. So we'll see if he's just delighted to see the Bucks coming to the Garden tomorrow night.
Yeah, and getting back to the Bucks, you know, we were talking earlier about their bench, and with Jabari being limited, that means that Giannis has to play some four, and then the rest of those minutes get split between Chris Copeland and Johnny O'Brien. You know, and looking at Copeland and O'Brien, you know, which of those two do you think has performed better given opportunities earlier in the season?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, Copeland last night really helped save the game for the Bucks. He and Grievous Vasquez, you know, came off the bench, and their contributions were desperately needed. Although Kidd joked about Copeland taking seven threes and saying he never saw anybody get off seven threes and that quickly, and of course he only made one,
which is not usually the clip that he shoots at.
No, but he did. play better defensively, I thought, last night, Copeland. And he does make some plays. You know, he scored in that big run in the third quarter when the Bucks were threatening to let the Sixers take control of the game. He had, I think, 5 points in a row. So, but saying that, Johnny O'Brien has been surprising. You know, it's clear that Kidd has told him, okay, don't try to do too much. You know, your job is not to come in here and take a lot of jumpers. Your job,
which he's still doing to some extent. He's still shooting a little. He's a little too, quick to pull off those mid-range jumpers. He's a little too quick on the trigger, and he's not making enough of them to really have earned that right yet.
No, and I think he's been told that by the coaches. You know, Kidd has said this on more than one occasion. Okay, I see his role as rebounding, hustle plays, and you can see he's doing more of that. I see more of that than we saw last season. You know, he's getting some rebounds that are helping, and I don't think he's going to play a lot of minutes. So if he comes in and in his 10, 15 minutes he's providing that, I think that's valuable.
Yeah, so far this season with O'Brien, you know, with Jabari out, you know, he's averaged 20 minutes a game at this point through five games, and that went down, you know, to 12. And that 12 was included in the calculation. That's going to go down with Jabari playing more. So he's the one who probably gets more adversely affected by Parker's return, because Copeland's only averaging like 11.8 minutes per game, and he didn't play at all against Brooklyn. And he's kind of, you know, Kidd's still kind of feeling him out. He's still, you know, even though they play together and they know each other, you know, he's still feeling out how he fits within this team and what type of usage to put him on the floor for. I think
he wants to use him, Matt, the way he used him last night. In other words, to bring him off, to provide a spark.
Just for 10 minutes.
Yeah, when they're struggling to score, we know that they've had scoring struggles, and you know they desperately need Vasquez and Copeland to provide some offense off the bench, and last night they did. So, and that was critical, as we said. But I see Copeland as more in that role, but it will evolve. And as we just talked about, though, Parker isn't going to play some of these games coming up. So that being said, Johnny O'Brien and Copeland are probably going to share those duties somewhat. The other thing that he did in Brooklyn, he put Giannis at the four, and he brought Bayless in at shooting guard. And, you know, that worked to get them their first victory of the season. Giannis has been very consistent. You know, I looked up today, and Giannis is leading the Bucks in scoring. So, yeah. I mean, you would have thought that would be Greg Monroe, and it's very close. I think Giannis is averaging 21.3, isn't it? And 19.8 for Monroe. So, but those, and then Chris is behind there in third. But those are the primary scorers for the Bucks, no doubt about that.
And Giannis last night, you know, he put up 17 points against the 76ers on 7-for-11 shooting, but it was kind of a quiet 17 points and a quietly efficient night for Giannis. I mean, he's shooting really well this season, almost 60%. You know, not really forcing too much, not taking too many threes, you know, just kind of finding his spots, driving to the hole, and you know, using his length and his athleticism to his advantage. And as long as he's doing that, you know, he's going to be effective.
Yes, I think so. You know, he made a three, and he probably had one or two others that he passed up that he could have taken. So, but I do think he's gaining confidence shooting the three, and he's more confident in his moves. Of course, the signature play that Giannis made, I think, in the Sixers game was that end-to-end play at the end of the third quarter.
Oh, at the end of the second quarter, wasn't it?
Or was it second quarter or at the end of the second quarter, right?
I think it was at the end of the first half, yeah.
And scored 3-point play, correct?
I think you're right. I think you're right. It was the third quarter, man.
It was at the end of the third.
I'm all off. You're right.
Yeah, it was at the end of the third, man. And he that was just a big play and showed his athletic ability and his seven steps to get from one end of the court to the other. So
he's falling off, huh? You usually take him only a couple, only
should be
four or five.
Right. But he, he's been playing very consistent basketball, and I think that's something. Remember last year he would be up and down quite a bit, and it seems now that, you know, he's feeling a groove. He's getting himself into a position where he knows he's going to score every night. It's not a surprise when he scores 20 points now.
Yeah, the one downside, though, is when you're playing teams like, you know, the Nets and the 76ers, who are both still winless, you know, you shouldn't need to use Giannis for 42 and 41 minutes in those games, and the Bucks did, you know. So I think as the season goes on, when you get into games that you know you should win, you know, you can't mess around. You can't let the other team hang close and force you to play your starters for more minutes than you want to, because that's going to hurt you when you get towards the end of the season and your guys have logged big minutes in games that, you know, you would think that you wouldn't need to use them as much.
No, I mean, they certainly got a scare from the 76ers, and they, as we said, you know, losing that game at home would have been very devastating early in the season. Now, Okafor played tremendous, Nerlens Noel. The Sixers have played teams close. They had lost to Cleveland by seven just a couple nights ago and had a big early lead. So it's not like they're going to be blown out in every game. But I think, you know, I talked to Greg Monroe about that. He said they play hard. And, you know, there's the expectation around the league that this is, you're playing a D-League team, this should be an automatic W, just don't worry about it. But, you know, and that is the perception and in some ways the reality. But also, you know, you can get stung. Somebody's going to get stung, and it almost was the Bucks last night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, right now they're sitting at 2-3. You know, you look at the standings, and, you know, there are teams like New Orleans that's sitting there at 0-4. I don't know if anybody saw that coming.
Wow.
You know, and the Rockets are 2-3. They're, you know, people expected them to be over 55 wins this year, you know, bringing back all the guys they brought back.
Think about being 0-4 in the West.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost a death sentence. You are going to have a hard time. Now, that's a playoff team last year, New Orleans. They've got the Brow. They've got Anthony Davis. They have injuries around him.
They've got a lot of injuries around them.
Yeah. So they've been struggling. And now all of a sudden you're saying, wow, can this team make the playoffs? And they have a tough schedule coming up. If, say, they go 2-8 or something in these first 10 games in the West, it's almost impossible to recover from that. Mm-hmm. And remember that Oklahoma City did not make the playoffs last year. Just being edged out, they had the same number of victories, remember, as the Pelicans, but the Pelicans got the last spot. So, you know, Oklahoma City is going to be one of the playoff teams this year, unless injuries strike them again at a high rate. They're going to be one of probably the top teams in the West.
Yeah, you expect so. And so, you know, if you're looking, like I said at the beginning of the podcast, if you're looking at this as a Bucks fan, 2-3 isn't the worst thing in the world. You know, one of those losses came to the Raptors, who are playing out of their minds right now. You know, the other loss came
One at Oklahoma City. That's very impressive.
The other loss came in a winnable game against the Wizards, who are also playing very good basketball. You know, and on Wednesday night beat the Spurs on a Bradley Beal three, which I don't know how you leave him as open as he got. You know, but
he's not the guy to leave him open.
No, not at all. And then, you know, the other loss, you know, of course, there was that opening night, you know, game against the Knicks where the Bucks looked you know, pretty atrocious. You know, so you take that game and say, all right, you know, that was just a bad game. You kind of have to just flush that away and kind of say, you know what, those happen. You know, some nights you're great, some nights you're terrible. Most nights you're somewhere in the middle, you know. So far, you know, things have gone somewhat according to plan. You know, if that Knicks game had a different result, you know, you're looking at probably 3-2 at this point in the season. And, you know, that's not a huge difference from 2-3. And so with the schedule,
and now they just, I think what will be interesting, Matt, is how do they play against the Knicks tomorrow? Mm-hmm. They should be embarrassed about that first game. I'm sure they were.
And now they'll have Giannis and Jabari both playing.
And Giannis, well, there you go. Remember, yeah, Giannis and Jabari did not play in that game. It's it seems like ancient history already. It was just about a week ago, but mm-hmm. neither of those, that was Giannis was suspended for that game. So I'm sure he's looking forward to playing at the Garden as well.
So Charles, give us a little bit of, I know we've talked about it a little bit during here with the Nets and the Celtics and the Nuggets coming up, but give us a little bit of a preview of the games that will happen between now and next week's podcast.
Yes, well, there'll be the Nets on Saturday. They're going to have a big tailgate. I know there's been a lot of publicity about that from 2 to 6 p.m. Out there outside the Bradley Center Saturday. And you won't be there. You'll be doing your Badger blog. You'll be out of town. But,
but that game will be put up on a big screen outside the Bradley Center. So
it will be. They're going to show that. So if you want to come down and watch the Badgers and then watch the Bucks, I think that you can do that. And Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Oscar Robertson are slated to make an appearance and be on the stage around, from what I understand, Matt, around 5:30 on Saturday. And the Bucks owners are going to be out there. And there's also supposed to be some renderings of the interior of the new arena. I think the whole idea of the tailgate is to kind of thank the community for... And to celebrate the fact that they're getting started with this new downtown arena. So it'll be interesting to see what maybe next week we can talk about if we get to see a picture of a part of the interior of the arena itself. And then, as you said, then they'll be playing the Nets again. They just played in Brooklyn. The Nets have been struggling. They've got Brook Lopez. And he had an interesting duel with Monroe in the game Monday. Both players played well. There was some controversy here on Monday because Lopez picked up his fifth foul and had to sit. And then Lionel Hollins, the Nets coach, didn't get him back into the game until the Bucks had a three-point lead with 31.7 seconds left. So there was some discussion in New York that, what was Lopez doing sitting on the bench? You know, what were they waiting for? They brought him back a bit late, it seemed. But anyway, mm-hmm. So that will be an interesting game. Then the Bucks have Boston, a young team kind of going through a rebuilding process, but they've got some good players. Jay Crowder, as you know, from Marquette, is back with the Celtics. You know, you got Isaiah Thomas who can score points in a hurry. So that should be a good game at the Bradley Center on Tuesday, and then off to Denver on Wednesday. Denver, Kenneth Faried, you know, they're going to look a little different without Ty Lawson, who's now down in Houston. So,
but they're a little more exciting now with Emmanuel Mudiay playing in there.
Mudiay is one of the top rookies. I'm really interested to see him. He was playing in China last year, but he's one of the top rookies. And you know he's going to play. He's the Nuggets point guard, and he's going to play and get a lot of playing time this year. So it will be real interesting to see a different-looking Nuggets team. And you got to think the Bucks have opportunities to win all these games, man. And now mm-hmm. We don't know how many they're going to win, but these are games. The schedule is going to get much tougher. You take a little peek as you go along in November, twice with Cleveland. They're going to have Cleveland coming up on a big Saturday night. Expect a big crowd, I think, for that 14th game, November 14th at the Bradley Center. Then they're going to be on TNT against the Cavaliers on the 19th, their first TNT appearance in a long time. So that will be interesting to see. They've got Washington on that road trip in the middle of the month. It's Washington, Cleveland, Indiana. That's a pretty tough trip.
That's definitely a tough trip, especially with the Pacers playing, you know, a little bit better. The record doesn't show it, but with Paul George back, I think they're a much better team than they were last year for sure.
You bet. And then Detroit, which has been playing great, comes in on that Thanksgiving week, and you got Sacramento, and then they go out on another trip. So you're saying now
is a golden opportunity to get some wins.
Because you got LeBron coming up twice here a little later on, and you know that's going to be a supreme challenge. The Cavs are off to a very good start. It turns out they lost that opening game to the Bulls, but now they really seem to be hitting their stride. So, yeah, it will be very interesting. The back-to-backs coming right away for the Bucks, and the schedule makers, you know, don't seem to have done them a lot of favors early in the season. And they've got a West Coast trip in December, but that's just all part of the NBA schedule, as we know. So, all right, Matt. So next week we'll be talking about some of these games and looking forward to that big matchup with the Cavaliers. I know there should be a big crowd that night to see LeBron go against the Young Bucks.
Oh yeah, I mean I'm sure that's a game that people have had circled, and as far as I know, the Bucks have really marketed that game and put it in some of their ticket packages. Because they know that LeBron and the Cavs draw. And so especially on a Saturday night at home, you know, there's no Badger game, so I'll be there. That'll be a good week. So that's what we'll have to talk about next week. Hopefully we'll be able to talk about some of these Bucks players coming off injury and the way that they fit into the lineup instead of just saying, well, Henson's still out, Mayo's still out, MCW's still out.
Yes.
You know, when are they going to come back?
Yes, Matt. Hopefully we can talk about that core six group actually playing all at the same time. If John Henson comes back, if MCW is back from his ankle injury as well, then we'd actually have that core six playing in some games, and it's going to be very interesting to see how that all works out. And then how Kidd runs his rotations. You know, one last thing that was kind of interesting last night that Kidd answered in the post game. He said that at times they're going to try to split Giannis and Chris and have one of them play with the second group.
Yes.
And I found that very interesting, but he's saying obviously that could help that second group and give them a little more bite. And I think it's a way because they feel now with Jabari back, they can do that. They couldn't do that before.
And that doesn't necessarily mean that Giannis and Middleton wouldn't necessarily start together. It just means that
they'll still start, but during the game.
Right. One of them, you know, when the starters kind of sub out late in the first quarter or in the second quarter, one of those guys would stay on to kind of add a scoring threat and some stabilization to that second group and kind of try to keep the pressure on the opposing team instead of just saying, all right, we're going to go with a full bench unit and just kind of throw those guys in right off the bench and say, all right, you know, keep the lead for us or go get the lead for us. In this situation, Kidd would use Giannis or Middleton to, you know, kind of keep the momentum going, or, you know, if they are in a position where they're trailing, leave one of his best scorers on the court in a situation where they might not be defended by the best guys that the other team has to offer, because the other team is very likely in the second quarter bringing in, you know, their second unit and their reserves.
Yeah, they would. Most teams do that, as we know. You know, they're going to have late first quarter, early second. You're going to see some subs out there. So, very interesting. And I guess one thing I should say too, I'd be remiss not to single out Jared Bayless for his effort in Brooklyn. You know, six threes and 26 points in the start, and 6 for 10, matched his career high. And all those points were needed by the Bucks in another close game. And Kidd said he told him before the game, hey, you might not you're going to have to play a lot tonight, and a lot turned out to be 47 minutes. So he got 1 minute off in the first quarter, and that was it.
Yeah.
So a big effort for him. And then, of course, he started against the Sixers, and I take it if MCW's out, he may start again tomorrow. But I think he's more effective at shooting guard than at point guard. He can run the point guard show, but they went to Vasquez doing that more often last night. And really, Bayless, sometimes I think he's better off the ball and knocking some shots down. He can still handle the ball, but we've seen him excel at times at that shooting guard spot.
Yeah, and that just frees him up to drive off the wing, or to take that open shot off the curl, or, you know, just some different things he can do instead of being the distributor who starts the offense. He's able to kind of, you know, move across the court and find his spot and get the ball in an advantageous position for himself, you know, and that's really, you know, one of the ways that he's most effective, you know. So when you're able to put him in on the second unit, you know, normally, which is where he'll be, if you could put Vasquez as the point guard and then Bayless at the two, you know, then I think that definitely changes the dynamic of what he can do and what he can provide. Now, he's not going to, you know, make three-pointers like he did against the Nets every game. He's not going to score like he did, you know. But the way the Bucks are set up is that, you know, they have guys who can put together a night like that every once in a while. And they're not necessarily going to do it all together on the same night and really just kind of put teams away. They're going to have that one guy step up, you know, and get them to where they need to be, you know. And last night off the bench, you know, I wrote in my notes that Gravis Vasquez, you know, he hadn't been shooting well. He shot 6-for-28 entering the game, was 2-for-14 from three, but he came in, especially in the second half last night, and added a spark off the bench. You know, he made the right decision at almost every juncture. You know, when he was in the game, the Bucks were up by 20 points. I mean, he led the team in plus minus. So
yeah,
you know,
that was awesome plus minus number.
Yeah, and he also kind of got off the schneid a little bit. He took 12 shots. You know, which is, you know, just kind of him. You know, he said after the game, "I'm not afraid of failure. I'm not afraid to put the ball up even when I'm cold." You know, and he went 4-for-12. You know, he finally hit a three,
he
and he kind of
be streaky. You know, I'm waiting to see one of those where he doesn't miss, and that's going to give them a real boost because he can get very hot from three. We haven't seen it yet. He hasn't been.
No, you know, there's going to come a night where he puts together a performance kind of like Bayless did against the Nets. It's going to happen at some point. Now, how many bad shooting performances do you have to go through to get to that? I'm not sure.
That's the key.
but you know, Jason Kidd said last night he doesn't really care about his shooting. You know, as much as, you know, you might expect that the Bucks brought Vasquez in to be a shooter and add a shooting threat to a team that's not a great shooting team from the outside, you know, he said, "Hey, he's not here to score. He's here just to make good decisions and run the offense." And so far, you know, he likes what he's seen from him, you know, especially in last night's win over the Sixers.
Well, he's been a starter at point guard, and that's why they got it, because they know that he started that 1 year in New Orleans quite a bit, almost most all of the games, and he started for Toronto when they've had injuries, and he can do that. So that's very valuable. Sometimes you have a backup point guard in the NBA who's not proven himself starting, and Grievous has. So I think that's why they felt that he was such a key person to get. And as we know, they traded that number one pick they got from the Clippers, that first round pick that's protected, but the 17 pick that they had received in the Jared Dudley deal the year before. So it'll be interesting to see how that all works out, but it certainly filled a big need. All right, man.
Yeah, it looked like we were going to...
We talked about some more things, but hey, that's good. And we can talk about the Bucks again next week and see how they fare with this back-to-back schedule that they're looking at.
Yeah, it looked like we were going to end for a little bit there, and then we just ramped it back up. So, you know, thank you, everybody, for listening to this edition of the Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. We'll... Be back next Thursday. Lakeland will record again, so the next podcast should be out next Thursday or Friday. As always, you can find our latest podcast on in the Bucks blog at jsonline.com/bucks, or you can subscribe via iTunes. So thanks for joining, and we'll talk to you next week.